I'm Jason Klom, and this is the Comedy on Vinyl podcast.
Hey everybody, Jason Klom here, your host. Thank you very much for your patience. We're almost at episode 250. This is episode 249 and a half, I guess. It's a baby episode. We do these every once in a while. Last time I did one of these, I was just checking just to see which number baby episode it was, and I was announcing the Comedy Album a Day project, so I should address that first. So this was a very ambitious idea I had, where I was going to listen to the bulk of my comedy album collection, and that didn't happen. And actually trying to make that happen stressed me out so much that it just didn't go through. It's not like watching a movie. Watching a movie is something, which is weird, because it's much less time. It's half the time of watching a movie, but there was something about it that it turned out to be not just stressful, but it was just, I think a lot of it is because a lot of the albums you're listening to are not the ones that have risen to the top, like so many of these historically have. A lot of them were gems that I'd never heard of before, and I was really excited to listen to, and especially early on. Like, I would say the first 60 days of it, I was super into it still. But at some point, it became a task, too much of a task. I still plan to listen to all of them. It's just going to be a little slower. And, you know, maybe I'll report in every once in a while when I do them. But, you know, I did try and it didn't happen the way I hoped it would. But that's okay. I listened to a lot of them. And as I've said a few times, a lot of them are crap. But that's okay. You kind of get to sift through and realize what your tastes kind of, you learn about them more, which was kind of fun. I like actually learning my own tastes a little bit better. And, you know, as a comedy writer and performer myself, you learn from the good as well as the bad. So it's fine to listen to either one. It's just there are times when it was just too much. Too much of the same, too. There are some artists who do very similar stuff from album to album, and I could always listen, like Rusty Warren. But, you know, that's, like I said, I learned some things, and it was super fun to do while it lasted. But this episode is weird. This one is not intentionally weird, but I've had these two things sitting here in my back pocket for a while now. You're probably hearing me clicking in the background, and that's because I don't know when I recorded this, but I recorded these back in April. One of these was back in April, the other was back in August. So I was looking through my albums and realized I had two by the same gentleman, two album covers, pardon me, by the same gentleman. One was one of the Nixon albums that I think I talked about that one in the thing that I wrote for the Interrobang. And the other one is a Carlin album, the second version of Takeoffs and Put-Ons. And his name is Sandy Huffaker, and he's a really great political cartoonist. That's mostly what he does. And so I decided, well, hey, I would love to talk to you a little bit more about album cover design and art in general. And it ended up being more about art in general, because he only really has done the two album covers, which makes me kind of think, well, hell, I should have him design my album cover when I release it. Hopefully later this year, actually. And really fun, I don't know, very vibrant art. And it looks like, you know, what we would consider to typify a political cartoon now. But done in a really fun way, because it's for comedy album covers. And he was just a lot of fun to talk about, and not just about art, but about being there during the civil rights movement and that being very important to him, and wanting to speak out through his art. So it becomes as relevant as any good conversation we've ever had about political comedy or, you know, socially conscious comedy. So that's in there. That's the first thing. And then the second thing is a little more on the surreal side, ironically enough, because I was trying to capture something very real, but it's surreal. It would be more surreal if you didn't know what it was. So back in August, I went to the Phonograph Society get together that they have. They have it here once a year. It's in near Anaheim. Went with Taylor Jessen, Firesign Theater's archivist. And I had my new Zoom with me, newer Zoom, and it's got a very nice dynamic stereo microphone that you can attach to it. And I brought it with me thinking I was going to interview people, because I'm still researching the Comedy on Vinyl book. I'm researching a very specific chapter of it while I'm down there. And ended up getting information, but more connections. So you should talk to this guy. You should talk to this guy. It was this really great ping-ponging where it's like, that's the guy to talk to. And then that guy to talk to told me who the next guy to talk to was. And I went through four or five guys, all of whom I think will end up doing the podcast, actually. And ended up getting to kind of the top of the heap in terms of guy who was a specific expert in the type of sketch comedy that I'm looking into for this, the chapter on sketch comedy. and didn't end up interviewing anybody because it would have been awkward, and I could tell that I would have like kind of made people uncomfortable and wouldn't have gotten much information out of them. So I left the recorder in my back pocket, as it were. And eventually, towards the end, I decided, as I'm walking around not buying anything because shit's expensive there, and I don't have a cylinder player yet. That's not a thing that I have. I would love to have one, but didn't have that. So I decided, you know, this is an experience that I'm not even paying that close attention to. Like in one corner, somebody's playing an old cylinder on a new machine. Somebody over there is playing a 78 on a very nice Victrola. Somebody over there is playing a weird generic music box with holes cut in it on a plate, a round plate. Just some very weird, interesting things, like every variety of recording media and player up to a certain point was there. So I decided, well, why don't I just record me walking around it so you can get the different, sort of get the variety of experience. So I actually walk around it, I think, twice. It's long. I want to say it's like 7 minutes or something. And so that's all you're going to hear. You're not going to hear me talking much. I think I talked to Taylor Jessen at one point. But for the most part, what you're getting is just that. You're just going to hear me walking around the American. So if you want to hear that weird ass thing, go ahead and stick around till the very end of it. And let me know what you think. I mean, it's not a creative endeavor, so if you say you don't like it, I'm not going to be hurt, because it's just fun. But it is one of those things that definitely will benefit from you having headphones on. Over the year, headphones are always preferable for that kind of thing. But if you can't, if you're at work, you know, you're listening to your headphones, do it. You know, speaking of that, it would be fun for you guys to tell me how you listen to this. I don't have a phone number set up for Comedy on Vinyl. I have one set up for my other podcast, Dana J's Comedy Hour, and for my Dispatches from Fort Awesome, a news radio podcast that I do. Don't have a phone number for Comedy on Vinyl because I've never really needed one. But you know what? If you want to call the Dan and Jace Comedy Hour one, you know, leave me a voicemail. It'd be really fun to hear from the audience. We've got, over the years, we've gone from literally nothing to a lot of listeners, a lot of people who really love the show. As much as I would love to ask people for financial support, like, I completely get, like, why one can't. However, what would be helpful is to get content from the audience. I mean, you could leave me a lengthy voice. You can email me, too, actually. If you email me jason@comedyonvinyl.com, you can email me either something you've typed or an audio file of you talking about Comedy on Vinyl, something you're interested in. Just, I think you know my tastes, so, you know, just make sure... Make sure you're cool. I think you get that. You know that I'm a sensitive boy. So just be cool. And, you know, leave me a message. The phone number to call if you want to call, 208-557-3524. Leave a voicemail to Google Mail thing. You're going to hear the Dana J's Comedy Hour message. Ignore that, except for the disclaimer that your stuff will be used. But, well, you know, just say if it's for Comedy on Vinyl. Or like I said, email me jason@comedyonvinyl.com. I would like to be in touch with people more. Because I do 3 podcasts and I make movies and all this other stuff, I don't really get to hear specifically from people too often. When I do, it's amazing because people put me in contact with amazing people, sometimes send me things, which I'm in no way asking for, but it's very cool when people do. And people give me information. And when people give me information in like the nicest way possible, that shit makes my friggin' month sometimes. Like, people will give me the education I'm looking for. I mean, that's the reason I do this podcast. I know a lot about comedy. I really do. But specific things, I don't always know that much about. You know, you're always learning. It's always fun. So I'd like to hear from you guys more. Two other things. One, I've got another comedy album that we just released for free. You go to bit.ly/ho for the holidays. It's like home, but ho, like ho, ho, ho. You can download that album for free. It's my Christmas comedy album, Dan and Jay's Comedy Hour, my sketch comedy group, which is celebrating 25 years this year. Yes, I started it when I was 13, but it's true. You can go get that for free. You can buy the CD at Celery Sound. Just go to bit.ly/comedy albums. That's right. If you go there, Comedy Albums, it'll go right to Celery Sound. And the other thing that I'm super excited, I cannot wait till we can talk more about why I'm doing this. But this is one of those things that the podcast has given me the opportunity to do. Taylor Jessen, Firesign Theater's archivist, has entrusted me to help digitize Firesign Theater's VHS archive. So that is something I'm doing that I feel like you guys might be interested in. And eventually we'll be able to talk more about that and why that is. Anyway, here's this very weird episode. Let me know what you think. Enjoy the show. Hi, everybody. It's Jason Klom with the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. I have on phone with me Sandy Huffaker. Thank you so much for joining me.
Sure, thank you.
So, the reason I originally contacted you is because I realized you designed two of my favorite comedy album covers. One was for Richard Nixon Superstar, and the other one is George Carlin's Takeoffs and Put-Ons. And I do love both of those. So are those the only two comedy album covers you've done, or am I just completely unaware of the other ones?
I think those are the only two I did.
And how did that come about? Because, I mean, they're both like, I don't know, I've seen your art, and I know that you do a lot of political cartoons and stuff, and I want to know who approached you, how that happened.
I forget who it was, but on the record company, they called me, and I submit a rough, and get the okay, and go ahead and do it. I think those are the only two I did, but I did a lot of other stuff, but political.
Sure. Yeah. Did you know the work? Did you get to listen to the work before you designed it?
I don't think I did. That was a long time ago, but I don't believe I did.
Okay. Because what's interesting is...
I know.
Sorry, go ahead.
I know I tried to get the original back from the Fry album, and they said, oh, gee, we can't find it.
Oh, no.
Somebody stole it. Somebody stole it. So I'd like to have it back, but I don't have it.
Oh, that's too bad. Do you have the original of the Carlin?
Let's see. No, actually, no.
Oh, no.
Thanks for reminding.
Got to hunt that down.
I'm pissed off.
the reason I think I'm most interested in the Takeoffs and Put-Ons one so much is because your cover is the one I always had, but I didn't realize your cover was for the re-release. How familiar were you with George Carlin's work when you put it together?
Fairly familiar. Uh-huh. I liked him. I'm not sure what you mean by re-release.
Well, Takeoffs and Put-Ons, the original cover is a bunch of photos of him, and then they I don't know the year they released the other version of it, but the other version's got your cover, which I think yours is more well known.
Okay, good. Funny story about that cover. I got my daughter to post with hands on that.
Oh, really?
I got this old little Polaroid with her holding up something, so we could use her for George Carlin's hands. It's kind of a cute story.
That's amazing.
She's only about 11. But I had to make it look like, same style as his photograph.
Right. And were you just using photos that they sent you to draw him for the cover?
Yeah, they send you photos, and sometimes you have them yourself, but... Thank God for Google now. You don't need anybody.
Just oh, right. Exactly. I mean, yeah, that's insane. And you do a lot of work that's either, I notice that you pick and choose, like whether or not you want to be super realistic with your political cartoons, or if you're just completely like just free form exaggerated. I really like that about them. Do you, what makes you decide the style you're going to go for?
I think everything is what you're saying, the content. Sometimes you just want to be funny. Other times, serious. And most of the time, funny, serious, somewhere in between. But I alter the style. Sometimes I go with pencil, sometimes watercolor. And lately, I just some oil painting. But whichever. You just pick and choose, depending on the subject matter. And go with that.
Yeah. What was your guidance for Richard Nixon Superstar? Because again, that's one that I think I contacted you because I was a little confused about how I saw an advertisement in an old newspaper that had a cover for that album that I've never seen and I don't think exists outside of that ad. So, what did you use to do your cover for that?
Pen and ink. And then watercolor over the top of that. I have a little trick. You do the finished pen and ink and put the watercolor over that. Just kind of fogs up the pen strokes.
Uh-huh.
Then you squirt that with workable fixative. And the pen lines come right back up.
Wow, okay.
So that's what I did then. I still do that.
That's great. I really love that cover. Did you have any basic reference images for it, or were you going off of memory for that?
Oh yeah, plenty of Nixons, but I think I forget. They probably sent me pictures of David Fry, which I probably didn't have, but I was a fan of his anyway.
Uh huh. Do you?
Not a fan of Nixon, so
sure.
Worked out nice.
Yeah. Do you remember what was your experience hearing David Fry? Did you or seeing him? Did you see him on like Sullivan or anything?
Yeah, he was on there and TV. Johnny Carson, I guess, or whatever.
Sure.
He sort of went out of style after that comedy album was the best-selling comedy album of all time. I heard at the time, so that's good.
That's crazy. Yeah, I mean he made more Nixon albums I think than any other individual person, and yeah, I mean there's so many. Oh yeah, absolutely, and they're a lot of fun. I actually recently had to write an article and I had to pick like five Nixon related comedy albums, and I have maybe 10 of them, and there were probably 30 of them made. Who knows? I don't know how many they did, but yeah, those stand out. They're a lot of fun.
He's good at it.
But
then I think he kind of faded away after that.
Yeah, that's crazy. It's too, and he even revisited it later on, actually, if I'm not mistaken. He tried to revisit it, but I'm sure the popularity, because, I mean, it's a little weird to make a Nixon album years later after after Nixon's out of office and everything.
Yeah, that all works.
Actually, I feel like I should ask you about this because I've been having to think about this in writing it and thinking about all these Nixon albums. What do you think the part of a comedian, and I'm going to include political cartoonists in there because, you know, you're a humorist when you're a political cartoonist. What do you think the power is to actually evoke change? Or do you think it's just more of a reminding people that stuff is wrong and it needs to be fixed?
Can you really affect change? I would doubt it. But you have some input and influence a lot of people. What I always love to hear is you put into it what I was thinking myself, and I thought I was the only person thinking that. So that's always nice to hear. You said it, what I've been thinking. So that's a nice thing.
Yeah, so
you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do, absolutely, and I think it's one thing to reinforce somebody's inner thoughts by just repeating them back to them if you're in a conversation. It's another thing to put it in art.
Well, you have to have a good insight. Like, wow, I thought that, but I'd never seen it expressed before. So you want an insight that maybe nobody's put out there yet, rather than just beating the thing wrong.
Sure. Finding your own angle to it is probably incredibly important, especially if you're trying to stand out as an artist.
I think so. A new insight. It's got to be truthful. Nothing is as funny as the truth. So your humor has to have truth in it. Then it's really powerful.
Had you
hit on a truth.
Before you did the Richard Nixon Superstar album cover, had you done a lot of... Where were you at your career at that point?
I was a political cartoonist in North Carolina during civil rights in Vietnam. So I cut my teeth on heavy-duty issues in the South.
Yeah.
Where they didn't like how I thought at all. So I got a lot of hate mail. But that's cutting your teeth on heavy stuff. So I was against Vietnam and for the civil rights movement, which was not popular in eastern North Carolina. Before that, I was at the University of Alabama, and the Ku Klux Klan tried to kill my wife and I. So we went through, that was the late 60s, early 70s. So there were big trouble there. Much more racist than North Carolina.
That's, wow. And you're saying this is a result of your work, is that they were that threatened by your work?
Yeah, particularly North Carolina.
Wow.
In Alabama, it was more, we were in some marches, and they got our class schedule and tried to beat us with sticks and stuff.
My God.
Fraternity met to get rid of me because I had embarrassed the brothers by being a nigger lover. So we went through that stuff.
Wow. Wow.
And you cut your teeth on that, you're ready for anything.
Yeah, no, I would imagine. I would imagine that stokes the fires, though, more to just make you want to make even more art. You sound like the kind of guy, anyway, who would just be inspired to just keep going.
Oh, yeah. You found what you were born to do, I think.
Man. Where did this all start? I mean, living where you lived, where did your, man, I don't know. Like, I gotta tell you, like, myself as like a middling, like, never professional cartoonist, I love art of all forms and I try and do a little bit of all of them. And much as I even try and do satire, I think there are moments when I'm scared to do it as much as I'd like to. I want to know what pushes you through.
How come you're scared? People don't like you?
I don't care about not being liked. I care about the people out there who seem like they might have a little bit more power to actually cause damage.
I think whenever you have a strong opinion, about half the people aren't going to like you. And it kind of hurts because you want people to like you. But the other half are going to like you or love you. So you're going to get about 50-50. If you have a point of view, you can get by with a cartoon that doesn't say any damn thing. You know, but you don't want to do that.
That's true. I guess anytime you, regardless of the subject matter, anytime you're going to have that polarizing effect, huh?
Yeah, if you have you feel strongly about something, I think there are about 50% of the people who feel strongly the other way. So, you know, be prepared to get some bad feedback. It does hurt, but it's the way it is.
Do you remember the first political cartoon you ever drew?
I was in military school in Tennessee where I was born, and the headmaster was collecting yo-yos from people because that was real bad. So I had him go into his room, lock the door, and start yo-yoing. After he collected all these yo-yos. So damned if he didn't think that was funny. Came out on stage yo-yoing. So I thought, hey, I'm on something here.
That's amazing. God, that just feels like that's the perfect way to get started. I love that. That's so, not only to have an insight to something that mattered to you and to other people, but that also you directly got to see the reaction to it. That's fascinating to me.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I think a good satirist needs to go to military school to sharpen his fangs. You talk about rebelling. Ooh,
right.
I was there 6 years.
Ooh, boy.
I was there 6 years and ended up a private.
My goodness.
They tried to make me a sergeant. I said, nah, I'll buckle under all that pressure.
Right.
So I was hanging out with all the fuck off.
Now, I hadn't intended to get into this, but you tell me anything you're not comfortable talking about, but during the Vietnam War, where were you? What was going on for you?
I was married with a kid. At first you had to speak to college, and then you had to be married and sole support of a family,
uh-huh,
which I was. So that was how I didn't go. Plus, I was against it.
Of course.
So I was talking about Canada every now and then, but
yeah,
but I did. I never got called up.
Wow. Yeah. So, but you had a plan. You were ready.
But I didn't. I didn't need my plan.
Yeah.
I thought about Canada, but like a lot of people did, but didn't have to.
So now I'm curious, where your mind was as a political cartoonist during Vietnam. I mean, it's one thing to be against it, as we know so many people were, but I mean, to be a political cartoonist about something like that and to put like you say, put your own spin on it. Put your own. What was your own spin on this idea of being against the war? Was there something else that you concentrated on, a specific part of it?
I remember doing a lot of Nixon's in North Carolina. He prolonged the war by half and had about 50% more casualties. It could have been ended a whole lot earlier.
Uh-huh.
That's where I grew to hate him, because he kept the war going on and on. Oh, we're going to win this thing. No, we're not. So we didn't. The rest is history.
Yeah. Were there other satirists at the time, even other political cartoonists or other comedians that were sort of speaking what you wanted to hear, that you were interested in?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were. Most of the liberal cartoonists were against the war.
Yeah.
And for civil rights.
Do you think, what do you think the long-term impact is of something like, for instance, Richard Nixon Superstar, but any of the Richard Nixon albums? I mean, I don't think there's another political figure who's inspired so many comedy albums. I mean, this is a perfect timing for it, but what do you think that impact is? Is there a way to measure it?
Wait till we get to Trump.
Ooh. I know.
So the impact back then of...
Yeah, I mean, or even long-term, like, what do you think the impact of those albums was in general? I mean, like, I think we've established it's not going to cause direct change, but what do you think the importance of them is?
Let's see. Well, I think it's important to say what you think, and other people will agree with you. Maybe you can sway some people, but I don't know. You got to do it anyway. Regardless, I don't think you're going to change the world, but you give it a shot. It's nice to think. I think if you have some truth that nobody else has discovered, like I say again, an original insight, that can catch fire if nobody's ever heard it before. And then pretty soon, the truth will out. It catches on fire, and a lot of people start agreeing with you. I think if you catch some truth in here, Emma. I'll make it funnier, too. But you get some truth, you might do some good.
So in the end, it's going to be your passion that for whatever you believe that makes you just keep doing it, but you can't rely on the idea. You can't obsess over the idea that it's going to cause any change or even change any minds. You just got to, if it happens, great. Otherwise, you're doing your part. Your part is speaking your mind.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about if you're going to change the world. Chances are you're not.
Right.
That's okay.
I got to admire that, because I know that there are a lot of comedians who are, and I in no way do I look down on this. You know, a lot of comedians, I think, are very much about the idea that they hope they can change the world, and that wouldn't that be great? And yes, of course, wouldn't that be great? But I think it's, but then again, maybe it's because I interview mostly people who are in an industry where you're in front of people, you're in front of cameras, you're in front of audiences, you're so much about immediate reaction. And that involves a lot of fragile egos. And I think maybe in the cartooning world, you, as you said, it sounds like you got toughened up early.
Yeah, I did.
Man.
But yeah, you may be right. The stand-up guys may think that they can change the world more than cartoonists. I don't know. But I don't think they do. But they may think they do.
Right. You know what? This is, I don't want to take any more of your time. This has actually been perfect. What I think I want to do is, like, release this as a special kind of mini episode. And I want to make sure that people know where to find all of your work online or where else they can find it. Where can people go?
Well, you can go to CatoCartoons.com or StuffMakerArt.com.
That's perfect.
Stuff.
That is perfect. And that's great. You know, actually, when I was originally searching for you, I think I found your son's website, and I was like, oh, this guy's a great photographer. I'm like, oh, there's a junior there.
He does it all. he's pretty famous.
Yeah, he's got his photography is fantastic. But yeah, definitely. I will make sure to put links up to your website and everything so that people can see your art. And in general, thank you for standing up for amazing through art. Thank you for making some great points. And I really love your art, and I love that you were involved in, you know, these big parts in American history and got to be on the right side of history. That's also admirable.
Thanks, Jason.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you guys for listening. And as always, have a good thing.
I do have a couple of them.
Saturday, the guy might have been here somewhere. 但是我告诉你哦，真正哦，100年前哦，美国的东西没有用，英国的，你这个历史你先了解。对，美国的东西是在二次大战1940年代以后才开始。如果说在1950年代啊，以前应该是英国胜过美国。那时候英国海运大权的时候，那时候英国的声音呢、比美国声音好100倍。美国是后来才去的，这是英国的，这可以买啊，当然可以买啊，这650可以买啊。我刚才第一个进来就看到这个东西，
它这个声音还很清楚
哦。对啊，这边有一套，这可以买啊，这可以买。
这个其实这个
650，不是、如果说这个没有再次的。
Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. Please visit stolendress.com to listen to our other podcasts, read our blogs, read our tweets, watch our videos, and read our books. Please subscribe on iTunes, and if you like us, give us a 5-star rating and a nice review. You can find us on facebook.com/comedyonvinyl, Twitter @comedyonvinyl, and find everything else at comedyonvinyl.com. A major portion of Comedy on Vinyl has been underwritten by Stand Up Records. Please visit standuprecords.com for all your comedy needs and tune into the new Stand Up channel available on the Roku, where you can also find select episodes of this podcast.